Take a network break. I'm Drew Connery Murray.
And I'm Jonna Johnson.
Grab a virtual donut, and we're recording on Veterans Day, and Jonna, you just wanted to say a word about that.
Yeah, maybe say a quiet thank you to the heroes who fought World War I. It's not just a convenient holiday in November, but it's actually a tribute to all of those who fought what they called the war to end all wars. And it's too bad it didn't turn out that way, but it was a valiant effort.
Yeah, so thank you. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about security vulnerabilities in Cisco and Okta, a security warranty from SonicWall, a Lumen Google deal, lots of financial results, and more. Stay tuned after the news. We have a Tech Bytes podcast sponsored by Palo Alto Networks. We're going to talk with Palo Alto Networks customer Autodesk about how it migrated from SD-WAN and traditional VPNs to SASE or Secure Access Service Edge. We'll also talk about the trends that drove Autodesk's migration and the results of their SASE adoption. Just want to let you know there are new shows on the Packet Pushers Network, including N is for Networking with Ethan Banks and Holly Malitsky. They're covering network essentials and technically leadership with Laura Santamaria on how to become a better leader of technical teams. And Packet Protector, a podcast focused on the intersection of networking and security with me, Drew Connery Murray, and Jennifer Manella. I'll check that out at packetpushers.net. And also, we did launch a merch store recently. So if you want a mug, a t-shirt, a notebook, or something else with a Packet Pushers logo or your favorite podcast logo, just go to store.packetpushers.net. Jonna, before we get to the news, we have some FU, some follow-up. Last week, we had talked about Entra ID forcing multi-factor authentication. I misread the announcement. What's changing is, I guess they've already been able to enforce, multi-factor authentication as a security default in Entra ID for a long time. What's changing now is there used to be a sort of 14-day grace period where you didn't have to sign up for the MFA, and then it would be enforced at the end of the 14-day grace period. That has now changed, that 14-day grace period is no longer available. So apologies to the listeners for me misreading that. And thank you to the listener for following up. He notes that the downside to security defaults is that they aren't configurable. They are on for everyone or off for everyone. If you want to configure MFA, you need to use conditional access policies, which are only available if you're licensed for Entra ID Plan 1 or 2, which is included in the more expensive subscriptions. If you want something to harass Microsoft about, it would be not including access to conditional access in all their subscriptions. Yes, I guess that is a good point. He also asks, would companies like Cisco's Duo, which offer conditional access, sue them for, you know, maybe interfering with their competition?
Well, perhaps they would, but I think at this exact moment, Cisco has a little more to worry about because as we jump into our next news item, Cisco has just announced a very serious vulnerability in its unified industrial wireless software for, quote, ultra-reliable wireless backhaul access points. And Drew, I know this was your item, so maybe you want to talk about what this is?
Yeah, so the web-based management interface can be exploited with an HTTP request that could, if successful, let the attacker execute arbitrary commands with root privileges on the OS of the device. This has a SSV score of 10, perfect 10. The vulnerability is CVE-2024-20418. It's the result of a lack of input validation. Cisco's released a software update. It says to address the vulnerability, the update is your only option. There is no workaround. One last comment from me. The Register covered this, and tip of the hat to whoever wrote the subhead in the article saying, ultra-reliable wireless backhaul doesn't live up to its name. So chef's kiss on that one.
That is a good one. And just a reminder, folks, this is not figure skating. It's not a good thing to get a score of 10. A CVSS score of 10 is a very bad thing.
A bad thing,
so,
yes.
Yes, if you are running this, you really need to do that update as soon as possible.
Patch away.
Lots of articles about it, lots of links back to Cisco, so please just deploy that update.
Moving on, SonicWall has announced a new firewall aimed at MSPs and VARs who are looking to kit out customer branch and SOHO environments. This is the TZ80. It claims to provide up to 750 megabits per second of throughput while providing next-gen firewall, IPS, anti-malware, application control, and content and URL filtering, among other features. The thing, Jonna, that jumped out to me is that SonicWall says it's offering a free warranty of up to $200,000 if there's a security breach or a financial loss. The press release says this warranty is provided by a third party called CyInsurance and, quote, will help supplement insurance coverage by providing cash for covering deductibles or other out-of-pocket expenses before insurance kicks in. I think this warranty is only available if you buy specific tiers of the service. But this is the first time I think I've heard a firewall provider put a warranty on their firewall.
Yeah, I think this is amazing, and it's no offense to SonicWall, but I think it's surprising and heartening that it's coming from not a major enterprise player, but someone who's playing more in the brand in the smaller and SOHO environments. I think this is a great move, and I would love to see the bigger firewall vendors step up to this.
So I reached out to SonicWall to get more details about this because anytime there's a warranty, you have to look at the fine print to find out when that warranty is triggered and how you actually claim it and so on and get recompense. I have not heard back from them at the time of the recording today. So if I can do some follow-up later on, I will. Something like this, I assume the devil is in the details.
I assume too, but for once I'm going to suspend my cynicism, my natural cynicism, and say it'll be great news when we hear the first time that they've ever paid out, or that alternatively that they're so confident that they never need to pay out, which is also a potential reason for issuing this. So interesting news here. Sticking with the th security theme, long usernames, not a good thing. That's a free pass from Okta. Okta confirmed on November 1st in a security advisory that there's been a significant flaw in its implementation of Active Directory LDAP DLauth, which it learned of on October 30th and fixed the same day. In effect, if an attacker had cached a key from any successful Okta authentication, they could log into another user's account without supplying a password. And here's the kicker: as long as the username was at least 52 characters long, kind of an interesting spin on things. Yay for Okta for fi fixing things right away. It is kind of a serious bug. So, definitely you want to make sure that you are up to date and have everything fixed in your Okta implementation. But yeah, that's a weird one. 52 characters long and you get a free pass.
Yeah, that's weird because obviously, the thinking is the longer the, password, the more secure it is. But here it's the reverse. That's I'm a little bit boggled by this, frankly.
Yeah, it does really smell like just a snafu,
So, yes,
but
something
worth
mistake
noting
happened. Yeah.
since given their position in the industry. Moving right along, we have a couple of news items that have to do with computing companies partnering with networking companies. And the first one is Apple buying a big share in the satellite company Globalstar. Apple has invested $400 million in Globalstar, which currently provides it with satellite services, to buy a 20% share in the company in a deal struck on October 29th. According to the SEC filing, Apple is also committed to investing an additional $1.1 billion in quarterly tranches
Wow.
to fund the further build-out of Globalstar's low Earth orbit satellite network. Globalstar will retain all revenue it generates and control of its own board, but has committed to dedicate the 85% of its network capacity to Apple. Very interesting move on Apple's part. This looks, smells, and feels a bit like Microsoft's commitment to Constellation Energy of buying all energy produced by Three Mile Island for the next 20 years. It's sort of a, okay, Globalstar will dedicate 85% of its network capacity to Apple. Not sure for how long that will last. That deal is supposed to last. But it's interesting to see Apple is recognizing the need for wireless connectivity, for satellite connectivity going forward, and to the point where it's giving away money in exchange for bandwidth. Money today, bandwidth tomorrow.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not, I mean, having a hard time with this one because, Apple's not an ISP. It's not competing in the ISP market. Obviously, it has mobile devices and it wants to have as much connectivity as it can for those mobile devices. And I believe its phones can do direct-to-satellite communication without any special gear. So maybe it's just looking to expand that satellite coverage and maybe doesn't want to be tied to competing satellite networks like Starlink or, Blue Origin if they ever get their act together.
Well, I think even more broadly, Drew, what's going on is Apple is moving itself to being as much a media company as it is anything else. So, as a media company, it is wants to guarantee that it's got the appropriate bandwidth for delivering its media content. That's just a guess. Apple has not said any such thing to me.
I think that's a fair guess, though, yeah, because they, besides the phones, they also do produce a lot of content.
And moving right along in the theme of computing companies partnering with networking vendors, Lumen has partnered with Google on AI for its network and network for data centers. Lumen has signed a deal with Google that gets it access to GCP's Vertex AI platform with which Lumen will build digital assistants for its techs and support teams. Also, Google Cloud as a platform for running Lumen's digital twin of its network, a key part of its operations. In return, Google is using Lumen to expand its network both on existing and new fiber. So this seems to be sort of an AI in exchange for bandwidth deal. So we had money in exchange for satellite bandwidth, and we've got AI in exchange for fiber. Kind of an interesting one. To me, what leaps out at this is the digital twin of the network, which is a key piece of Lumen's operations, and a highlight, or rather a spotlight of the importance of digital twinning, which is something that's going to be in growing importance over the coming years, because that's one of the key things that you're able to use to do performance management, capacity planning, and all sorts of futuristic predictions.
Yeah, and we know the big cloud companies, the cloud service providers, are very hungry for data. So having access to new and existing fiber makes sense for Google. I think Google also wants to show people using its Vertex AI. I don't know how much Lumen is actually going to use it, but it allows them both to sort of showcase their specialties and say, look, we're partnering up because our stuff is great and we're eating our own dog food and our partners are eating our dog food as well.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what's going on here. So it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out. But again, the bigger theme here is computing companies partnering with networking companies, because computing is useless without networking, and networking is useless without computing in a very broad sense. Obviously, useless is a bit strong, but...
But we all hold each other up, yes. It's more useful when you put them together. Moving on to financial results, we'll start with Arista. They announced their results for Q3 2024. The company brought in revenues of $1.8 billion. This is up 20% over this time last year. Net income for the quarter was $748 million. Looking ahead on its earnings call, the company's forecasting revenues of $8 billion in 2025, much of that being driven by, can you guess, Jana?
I don't know. Drew, is it? Maybe could it be AI?
It could be AI. So Arista's predicting it's the fastest growth is going to come from cloud providers who are rushing to build out AI infrastructure. And from the enterprise campus, Arista's forecasting that its cloud and data center sales are going to be slower over the next 6 months. But they're talking about running trials with customers who are building AI clusters with 50,000 to 100,000 GPUs. All those GPUs need to be connected. And again, as you said earlier, the network is essential to that. So Arista hoping to also ride that bandwagon of AI to higher profits.
Well, and it's interesting, though, CEO Jayshree Ullal noted that one customer is running into power and cooling challenges. I'm not sure when she noted that, but I'm fairly confident that by now it's more than one customer, because, in fact, all of our clients are running into challenges when they start realizing that their existing data centers are not going to work from an energy and cooling perspective for AI. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that came from the call with financial analysts after the results. Arista's talking about running these trials with, you know, four or five big customers who have these huge amounts of GPUs, these giant GPU clusters. And the financial analysts wanted to know, are there other headwinds that could get in the way of this? And of course, as we've talked about here, power and cooling is a significant issue with GPUs, particularly that amount. So that's a potential impediment to Arista riding that AI wave if folks can't get the power or the cooling to build these giant clusters that Arista is going to sell them the switches for. One other thing is that Arista, you know, I think we talked about this recently, they're definitely well known in the data center and for cloud service providers, but they are saying they're seeing a real opportunity to gain traction in selling wired switches to the campus, which is a surprise for them. The company admitted to not being very good at this, in part because they don't have a strong Wi-Fi presence. And one of the ways you sell wired switches on the campus is by selling the APs as well. But they say they have a plan to fix that. No details on how, but maybe keep an eye out for your Arista rep knocking on your door to talk about Arista in the campus.
Well, yeah. And frankly, if they're predicting such good fortune going ahead, they certainly have the money to invest in it. So we shall see.
Yeah. And I've got the link to that call transcript from Arista if you want to check it out for yourself. Moving on, Extreme Networks also announced financial results. This is for the company's first quarter of fiscal 2025. The company had revenues of $269.2 million, which is down 24% year over year. The company posted a loss of $10.5 million for the quarter. They did look to salvage something from these results. The company's touting its annual recurring revenue from its SaaS-based Extreme Cloud IQ. Extreme Cloud IQ is its cloud-based management monitoring platform for all its products. The company says this annual recurring revenue for Extreme Cloud IQ is an important metric, quote, because it is driven by our ability to acquire new customers and to maintain and expand our relationship with existing customers. So the Annual recurring revenue was $174.1 million, up 23% for the quarter. So I think what Extreme is trying to say there is we're sticky with customers once we get them onto Extreme Cloud IQ, and that can, you know, drive growth over time. But in the meantime, it was a rough quarter.
Yeah, it was a rough quarter. I will say that their claim is not entirely outlandish, because I was recently at an Extreme event, and both existing customers and prospective customers were quite interested in the cloud-based management and monitoring. So I don't think they're making this up out of whole cloth, is what I would say, just based on what the customers were saying and their customer general stance. So it remains to be seen how that will play out, but at least that's the one silver lining in something that's otherwise a little bit bleak.
And our last story for today, Alphabet also reported their Q3 2024 revenues, and we'll just pull out the Google Cloud revenues. The Cloud Biz brought in $11.4 billion, up 35% over this time last year. And just for context, last week we talked about AWS revenues. They were $27.5 billion for the quarter, although growth was just 19%. So AWS is still the big dog, but what we're seeing is Google and Azure starting to catch up in terms of growth, meaning they're adding more customers and getting more money faster.
Yeah, and I think, Drew, the other thing to pay attention to above and beyond the cloud is that, their CEO says in general that AI investments are beginning to pay off for Google, which they better be, because, as I've said multiple times, AI is an existential threat for Google, so they have to be on top of this.
Yeah, I mean, every CEO is going to say the AI is paying off at this point, whether that's the case or not. So, but yes, I take your point. And just for comparison, overall Google revenues outside of cloud, just including search, that was $88.3 billion for the quarter. So, wow, that is so much money.
That about does it for the news items for today. So I think we had an upcoming Tech Bytes conversation coming up with Autodesk and Palo Alto Networks about Autodesk's transition from traditional VPNs to SASE, and that'll be coming right up.
Today on the Tech Bytes podcast, sponsored by Palo Alto Networks, we talk with Palo Alto Networks customer Autodesk about how it migrated from SD-WAN and traditional remote access VPNs to SASE, or Secure Access Service Edge. We're going to talk about the trends that drove Autodesk's migration and the results of their SASE adoption. Our guests are Prakash Kota, SVP and CIO at Autodesk, and Anand Daswal, Senior VP and General Manager, Network Security at Palo Alto Networks. Prakash and Anand, welcome to the podcast. And Prakash, let's start with you. Can you give us a quick overview of Autodesk and what you were seeing that prompted this look at the Prisma SASE offering?
Autodesk, for those who don't know about Autodesk is a trusted leader in 3D design, engineering, and entertainment software. We cover many industries, from engineering, construction, manufacturing, and media entertainment. So for people who bring physical things to life, they use our software to design first. So, and we are going through an exciting time of growing and scaling the company. Mm-hmm. And we also have the whole flex forward approach from a culture standpoint. So we don't expect our employees to come to a workplace to be productive, which means our employees are working from hybrid multiple locations around the globe. And so it was very necessary for us to modernize how our employees are connecting to company resources from multiple locations for them to be productive.
So that means employees all over the world coming in from who knows where. It could be home, could be a coffee shop, could be a branch office, a corporate headquarters.
Exactly. That's right. Anywhere, any place, anytime.
Okay. And then I assume you've also got employees who are deep into SaaS applications.
That's right. So Autodesk, I would say, if I look at the whole application footprint, 80% of our applications that employees access over the network are either SaaS-based or cloud-based solutions. So from Zoom to Salesforce to Microsoft 365 and name it, most of them are all cloud and SaaS-based applications.
So if you're big into SaaS applications, why focus on your remote access strategy? Because logically, I can just connect in as an employee to a SaaS application directly, right?
No, that's true. So the key thing is we also have a VPN solution, and we used to have a traditionally on-premise VPN solution, which was having difficulties to scale. And so we wanted to reduce the whole complexity and streamline. And that's where we chose the whole SASE solution from Palo Alto Networks. And if you look at our journey with Palo Alto, Autodesk has been a customer with their SD-WAN technology where we modernized, taking away all of our MPLS to SD-WAN solution, mm-hmm. and now bringing in SASE solution, as well as modernizing our firewall technologies, it actually brought everything on one platform. So we took the whole platform approach and bet on Palo Alto Network to really modernize entire infrastructure, which gave us great results.
So what is it that made you want to switch from traditional VPN to something different?
I think with the whole switch of leveraging SaaS applications and cloud applications, with employees over 80% consuming all of these SaaS and cloud applications, made us look at how do we evolve as we scale as a company. And then that's where we chose this platform approach, leveraging Palo Alto Network. And the results have been great. Like, we see 85% improvement in our remote network availability, as well as a 3x increase in network transfer speed, which is giving a great positive employee experience, as well as not compromising on security. It's more about not was bad, it is more about what else we can give for employees to better their experience when they are working from anywhere around the world.
So did you move directly to SASE, or did you do like a pilot program first?
It was an interesting thing. As I told you, we have been a Palo Alto Network customer leveraging their SD-WAN capabilities. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely did a very short POC with three vendors, and we selected Palo Alto Network. And what I'm really proud of the team is within less than 6 months, we modernized and migrated off from our current solution to the SASE solutions across 60 campuses, as well as for all remote workers, and divested our existing solution that we had at that time.
You divested it, as in you're completely off of your legacy VPN solution?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, 6 months is a pretty short time window for a global company. Yeah. Can you talk about how that happened?
I think this is where the partnership with Anand's team comes into play. We clearly defined our goal of an end state and started working backwards, like which all campuses we need to prioritize and how do we roll out to users, geo-basis, persona basis. And we stick to the timeline. It was a change management effort, and kudos to the network team that stepped up to really complete this activity. And the reason for the timeline that we had was because of the renewal that was coming up with our existing vendor. So we didn't want to double pay for two vendors. So we had a target to close out to ensure we switch to this vendor.
That kind of target usually helps.
Yeah.
So Anand, I wanted to bring you into the conversation, and just to round this out, SASE is essentially, you know, cloud delivered security services. You can get multiple security services sort of in one service, but the security industry for a long time has offered things like UTM appliances or even SD-WAN gateways that do include multiple security capabilities, a firewall, malware filtering, and so on. So what's different about SASE?
Yeah. Before we talk about SASE, I think, Drew, it's important to talk about, I think Prakash touched a little bit on this one. In many cases, customers have environments which are complex and fragmented from a network security perspective. What we did with Autodesk was help them simplify and unify network security, reduce their operational costs, ensure that we are able to provide their users with a better experience, and improve their security outcomes. Now, if you think of the journey in the last many, many years, the reason why it's gotten to the state is because the world of how we work has evolved. Traditionally, we were in the offices, accessing our applications only in the data center. You had hardware firewalls with multiple services or some additional hardware products that did point solutions. Over time, most customers have subsumed those functions on the hardware firewall to protect their data centers. Uh-huh. Then as applications move to the cloud, you couldn't put a physical firewall in the cloud. So you had a software firewall, a virtual machine, a containerized firewall, or a cloud-native firewall. And then as we had this remote workforce and remote branches, and especially as you saw in the pandemic, right, we want to provide a cloud-delivered security solution. You said SASE. SASE is nothing but networking and security coming together, delivered as a single, massively distributed cloud service. The issue is that most customers have most of these environments. You still have a private data center you want to protect using a physical hardware firewall with multiple point services. You have assets in the cloud. You have remote workforce, remote branches. And the key thing here is that when we simplify and unify network security, you want to have common policies, whether the users in the branch or on the or in the office or on the go, whether the application is in the data center, it's in the cloud today, or in multiple clouds tomorrow, right? And that consistent set of policies helps simplify and unify network security. So you define your policies for users, applications, devices once, and then those can be in different places at different times. And you do this all with common manageability, a single dashboard to configure user policies, device policies, application policies, see your insights, monitoring capabilities, AI operations. All of that is simplified to a single unified dashboard, single policy. And that's still the power of platformization.
If you're listening to this and that doesn't seem like a big deal to you, it is. I came from the world when building a security stack was literally a bunch of different solutions from a bunch of different vendors that accomplished the thing. And every time something would not work, you would have to dive through multiple policies on multiple platforms trying to figure out why is traffic flowing that isn't supposed to be, or more usually not flowing that is supposed to be. And it was maddening. I lived in that world of parsing through multiple UIs and multiple sets of logs, trying to make sense out of what was going on. So if you don't want to live in that world, then you're interested in a unified platform like Anand is describing right there.
And one more thing, Ethan, is that the journey can be different for different customers. What Prakash described to you was they were already a customer using our Prisma SD-WAN. Then they went on to using full SASE, and then they were able to migrate their firewalls. And then they were able to have this platform-centric, simplified, unified view. Different customers view on a different journey.
Yeah, I think that was one of the powerful things for us. Today, I have one orchestration layer where any policy change, imagine a zero-day vulnerability patch that we need to push, or policy change that we need to push. We're talking about one screen, one network engineer able to roll it out across the globe, rather than pulling in many people from many UIs, many devices, and checking on all of these things, which used to be a hassle. It feels too complex work. Now it became so simplified, while all the complexity is hidden behind. And that's what we really liked about this solution when we embarked on this journey.
You also mentioned, you know, one of your goals was enabling productivity. I think sometimes there's a concern about SASE about maybe introducing latency. Has that been an issue for you?
No, as I told you, I think the results show the other way around. So 85% improvement in remote network availability. That means it's very consistent and reliable access for remote workstations as well as application workloads, as well as boosted efficiency by 3x increase in the whole network transfer. And so we have actually seen significant, and employees felt it, like things are being more positive. I mean, things were not, did not have any problems as such, but they could see much more positive impact after a rollout. And the best thing is this was done behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. There was like a huge downtime, or other people didn't even know that we are changing our backend network bone across campuses and all how things work. Behind the scenes, over weekends, rolling it out over the 6 month period that I mentioned, all was done behind the scenes without people not even realizing such a major shift has actually completed.
So you're saying the end users essentially didn't notice you were essentially putting this whole new network access method at their fingertips.
Yep, and that was the goal. And that was one of the success criteria, that nobody should feel the pain or the change that's happening. And they should only start asking, hey, are things even better now? What happened? That should be the question, and that would be declaring a success, and that's exactly what happened.
So it sounds like, you know, users were happy, and you also mentioned like operational benefits on the network and security side.
That's right.
Can you drill into those just a little bit more?
I think it's more about the whole management on an ongoing basis. We have over 50 firewalls and the rules and the policies, and also who has what kind of access, ability to provide just-in-time access, ability to push policies, ability to handle any zero-day vulnerabilities when we need to make some changes. All of this done centrally through an orchestration layer. I think Anand's team has this tool. I don't know if I'm saying it right, Strata Cloud or something. It's more a user interface, one UI, one platform, where we can actually leverage to push and manage all of these three capabilities that I talked about between SD-WAN, SASE, as well as firewalls. And those things make a huge difference in how we manage our entire network footprint.
Yes, Strata Cloud Manager is the single unified management platform across all network security. You can manage your firewalls, hardware, software, your Prisma SD-WAN and your Prisma Access, everything from day minus one to day end. So think of operational things, configuration, policy changes, health of users, of devices, insights, analytics, AI operations, stitching things together across the entire infrastructure that you have for the enterprise.
Yeah. See, one thing what I feel really good, again, being in the industry for over two decades, I think we have come a long way handling network kind of capabilities and security capabilities with user experience in mind and the center of doing things, both for the operations team, the network team, infrastructure team, to the end user. It is so different and refreshing to see that experience first, while all of these capabilities are table stakes for any network provider, but usually these were afterthought. This like boring jobs to really handle all of these capabilities that Anand listed out. From there, putting the user at the center and the experience at the center for the end user, as well as the teams that are managing this, making it much more powerful when you hand it over to them, has been a refreshing change and shift. And that all comes with platform-based approach of how Anand highlighted. And that's one of the reasons why users or companies choose platform-based solutions rather than siloed different capabilities.
So Prakash, we're about to wrap, but you mentioned platformization, and I think that's top of mind for a lot of folks. As for other IT leaders who are thinking about a platform approach, what would you advise?
Yeah, so I think, see, as any IT executive that is leading transformation, there are four, I call it S4 principle, which is, as you're scaling the company, which we are going through, simplification and standardization is very important, and security is like table stakes. Mm-hmm. So if you're keeping security in mind, but at the same time you're scaling, it is very important to think about standardizing and simplifying. And that only can be achieved by a platform approach. We need to get away from having 1,000 favorite things and creating siloed solutions, because that hinders from scale. So as you're scaling, you really need to choose your partners where you can simplify and standardize across the board so that you can go fast, but without compromising security. So if you keep those things and principles in mind, because that's exactly those are the principles that I look for when I'm choosing vendor or choosing a capability to roll it for Autodesk.
Fantastic. Well, if you're interested in getting more information about Palo Alto Networks and Autodesk, they'll have a case study that you can read. We'll have a link to that in the show notes that accompany this podcast. Prakash and Anand, thank you for joining us. And thanks to Palo Alto Networks for being a sponsor. And if you, the listener, decide you want to check out SASE from Palo Alto Networks, let them know you heard about it from the Packet Pushers. And speaking of Packet Pushers, if you enjoyed this episode, you can find it and many more fine free technical podcasts and our community blog. It's all at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on LinkedIn, hear us on Spotify. And if you would, leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.